Okay, finally figured it out. Oh my goodness, hello there. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, back locally instead of working remotely. It's all good. Bill Newell also, same thing. Glad to have everybody back in the area. And this is North Shore Sports Night. We have an interesting lineup, a lot of local and other sports to talk about here this evening. Let me click off the music and say hello to Tim Kearns. Tim, are you there, brother?
Good evening, Rick. How are you?
You are. Good evening. I'm doing well, Tim. And despite the cold and damp and so on, we had a very nice Easter weekend. We actually got to go out in our grandchildren's backyard and commiserate with them for almost a whole day. So it was really a great weekend.
Good. Yeah, we were quiet. We got together with the family for a dinner and then back over to my brother-in-law's house for a coffee and cocktail.
Very nice. Very nice. And, again, things seem to be opening up and getting better. There's a lot of COVID scare out there with variants and all this other stuff. But the fact remains more and more and more and more people are getting vaccinated. And I keep getting, I'm fully vaccinated. I keep getting these email messages, whereas they would come to me before, then you'd open them up and they'd say, well, you know, no appointments available. Now they're coming in every day and it says, okay, if it's 3 p.m. in the afternoon, it says, okay, you can book one for 4 p.m. this afternoon. So it seems to be getting better and better. The bugs seem to be getting ironed out, and people are motivating to the vaccine is almost everywhere right now in Massachusetts.
Oh yeah, yeah. They're so fired up about the number of people that are getting shots, and they're forgetting you just can't take the mask off, go into large crowds. You know, they're making all the same mistakes as before, and we're seeing another surge. The numbers are going up, and at the same time, you know, there are certain states that are relaxing their restrictions, and they're just asking for more trouble.
And we are still trying to do the right thing, and I think, at least here in the North Shore, it seems to be a perpetual good thing that people are trying to do the right thing. Absolutely, in sports, the kids are doing the best job they possibly can. I don't think you can say enough, Tim, about the great job that the coaches, the directors of athletics, and the educators, the teachers are doing in this area. It's fantastic, Tim, that these kids have been able to play.
Yeah, it really has. You know, we've seen games canceled, you know, and when a football game gets canceled, it doesn't get made up. So, you know, for certain teams, like Swampscott, you know, they pay the price for walking over the line and not being careful enough. While a lot of most of the other teams have, the coaches have convinced the kids, you know, to follow the protocols. With somebody to want to give, if you want to keep playing, you've got to keep, you know, being smart. And the kids have done that.
Absolutely.
Three days last week, and I was really impressed with the kids. They were following the directions in the hallways. They had naps. They were separated. So I want to give kudos to the kids, lots of the kids that I saw, and I'm sure there are a lot of other kids throughout the area that are doing the exact same thing and helping make this happen.
Every coach I've talked with, Tim, and I've talked with a lot of them over the last couple of weeks, has said that exact same thing. They're echoing your words. And speaking of coaches, first of all, I want to thank all of our visitors, Tim. I don't know if you're aware of this, but we had 800,000 hits last month, which is a record by double over anything we've ever had before. We're getting individual visitors. We're getting hits to this website, as a former president would say, like no one's ever seen before. And it's been great.
Don't go there.
A couple of coaches I want to mention tonight. We have a lot of coaches' interviews up there today. We're going to have more tomorrow. Tonight we're going to start off talking with Michael Longi, who is the sports editor at the Daily Item of Lynn. We'll check in with Mike Grenier, of course, later on, and also with Gary Larrabee. Talk plenty of sports, both professional and local. A couple of coaches I want to mention. of posts that we have up there right now. I talked with Lynn English basketball coach Antonio Anderson a little while ago today. That is posted. Going to check in with Michael Lange and get his view on it. But Coach Anderson has had one of the most fantastic basketball records for a four-year period in the area. He finished 74-19 at Lynn English as he moves on to Springfield Commonwealth Academy. He finished 74-19 with two consecutive Division I state championships. And this year, Lynn English basketball moved over into the Greater Boston League, and he ends up winning that as well. So congratulations to Coach Anderson, and check out the interview with him. Also, we have posted our interview with St. Mary's High School football coach Sean Driscoll. We've got a couple of other posts coming up tomorrow. Kevin Fassett will be up there. We'll be talking with Jim Pugh and others. And also, we got to talk about Jim Rudloff, Tim. Jim Rudloff has coached 128 games as head coach of Marblehead, and he now has won 100 of those. And that's a record that nobody can seem has been matched on the North Shore.
No, certainly. We want to congratulate Jim. And he's really done it, you know, Rick, if you think about it, really under the radar. No one has talked about it until this year as he got very, very close to it. And I think he liked it that way. He's understated. He's not a big rah-rah guy. You interview him after a game, and he's very calm, very intellectual. He thinks about how he's going to respond to your question. And I think he's got those Marblehead kids acting and playing in a very cerebral fashion. They play smart. They don't make a lot of mistakes. They are truly a reflection of their coach, and that's a great compliment to get from someone. And because of that, and he's had some talented kids over the last few years, and his record indicates that. But you've got to be able to bring all that talent together, focus that talent, and give it the direction that he's been able to provide for them, and the results speak for themselves.
Coach Rudloff also, Tim, is always quick to speak intelligently and with knowledge about the opposition. And by that, I mean he knows what the kids are, who the kids are, he knows who the coaches are, and he always talks respectfully about them because, he knows that, they're a worthy opponent, and it only helps his kids to learn when you see what the other guys can do. But as an educator, you and I appreciate what Coach Rudloff does also as an educator. And as a matter of fact, I was talking with coaches today, and I think we can say that almost across the board here in eastern Massachusetts. You okay?
Yeah, the puppy's barking at somebody going by the house.
Okay, well-trained, all right. But across eastern Massachusetts, Tim, as we get into the other conferences and other leagues, the coaches are educators. And, in this particular year, to me, it's been a profound effort by the coaches, the athletic directors, the teachers, the parents, and of course the kids in navigating all of this. And, not only that, but then you end up playing a game and winning on top of it. So, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, one of the things, it's totally new territory for everybody that you mentioned, and they all had to find a way to work together. And the one common thread was get the kids to play. And everybody realized early on that what it was going to take was a collective effort on all of their parts to keep reinforcing the idea to the kids, because kids are going to be kids, and to make it known to them that they had to be smart, they had to be responsible. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of these kids learned over the past year, probably more than anything else, was the necessity of being responsible for their actions.
I think it's responsibility, it's self-discipline, and it's also priorities and understanding the important things in life. It came to these kids a little too a little earlier than it might have otherwise, and I think that's going to bode well in the future.
Yeah, we can only hope so.
Got some big games coming up in our Northeast Conference football. There's a lot of other stuff going on. But we're going to check in with Michael Longy here in a minute to bring us up to speed on what's going on in Lynn. Because as I was talking to Coach Anderson of Lynn English Today Basketball, I was mentioning to him that at this particular point, we're talking basketball, winter sports, and I believe hockey also in Lynn. We're talking actually fall sports with fall two football. And I think this week spring sports become eligible as well. So my head is a mess, and I'm hoping that Mike will help me figure this all out here in a second. Plus, Tim, at some point, you and I got to talk about how about them Red Sox.
There's nothing to talk about, Rick.
All right, so we'll take a break, and we'll be right back.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
All right, we're back now with the sports editor of the Item of Lynn, the Daily Item, and itemlive.com, Mike Alonji. And Mike, welcome back. How are you?
Pretty good, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Get through Easter weekend okay?
Yeah, it was nice. Played a little golf.
Oh, really?
Today, and yeah, ready to hit the week hard now starting tomorrow.
All right. Where did you golf?
I played up in New Hampshire, a place called The Oaks. It's just outside of Portsmouth.
Very nice. Good for you, man. We're going to talk with Gary Larrabee in a little while, so I'm sure he's glad to hear that. Mike, I want to start because I get so confused with stuff right now, especially the way the sports seasons are overlapping from Lynn, and I'm so happy that the Lynn kids can participate now. I want to start with Antonio Anderson. You wrote the story on Coach Anderson when they beat Everett, and you mentioned some of his statistics. And I wonder if you could expand on what you've seen from him as a coach and his players over the years, the time that you've been at the Item, which is relatively new. But the things that he has done with those kids, and it's more than just between the lines on the basketball court, are really pretty amazing. And maybe you could tell us your opinion about that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's you kind of mentioned it there. It's nothing short of incredible. The guy is, I believe, finished his final record at the school. So he's leaving. For those who don't know, he is stepping down as head coach of the English basketball team. He's moving on. He's been named the head coach at Springfield Commonwealth Academy, a prep school out in Springfield. So he's kind of moving up levels. The guy is an unbelievable coach. Obviously, you know, for people who don't know, the guy has a ton of bona fides. He was a star player at Lynn Tech. He went on to play at the University of Memphis with Derrick Rose, played for John Calipari, played in the national championship game, went on, played professional basketball, and then came back and, you know, has served as the coach for Lynn English the past 4 years. So his final record at English was 74-9. They won back-to-back state championships the 2018-2019 season and the 2019-2020 season, and then yes, the year before that, the 2018-2019 season. Mm-hmm. So back-to-back state championship. They were 8-0 this year in the shortened season that they were able to play. They won the GBL tournament title there, which was, you know, kind of as much as they could win because of obviously how things are structured this year. So they went out on top. And kind of like you said, it's not just on the court. Obviously, they've had a ton of talented players. He drew a lot of talented players to the school who may have otherwise gone to play at other schools. I know, for example, Jarno Guzman, who was a star there for a couple years, initially started his high school career at St. John's Prep before actually transferring back to English because of Antonio and kind of what they were doing over here. But really the thing that he'll be remembered for is sending so many of these kids off to school. I think, from last year's team, for example, four of the five starters, so the four kids who graduated of the five starters, all moved on to play college basketball. The year before that, I think he sent four other kids off to college. The year before that, I think he sent three more. So, you know, that was really kind of the big thing that Anderson was. And, you know, Dick Newton said it to me when I wrote the story. You know, he always stressed academics first. He made sure kids obviously paid attention to their school and stuff like that. And that's kind of what got them into college. Obviously, basketball ability gets you far enough, but, you know, those grades, you know, get you that next step up, right? So he kind of always stressed that, and, you know, obviously it's evidenced by how many kids he sent off to school.
Great.
And he'll be sending more off this year, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Great, great story. Did you say 74-9?
74-9.
Okay, then
And get this, they lost, I believe, five games his first year as their coach.
Yeah.
So they've only lost four games in the past 3 years.
I misread it in the paper, and I put 74-19 in my post, and I'm changing that right now as we speak. 74-9. Good Lord. Tim, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm back, Rick.
All right. So, join in here in a second. I want to just follow up with this. With Coach Anderson moving on. But I think the big thing, one of the big things that you just mentioned, Mike, is the fact that, you know, kids came back to Lynn English because of Coach Anderson. And, he's very proud of the fact that he has kept his eye on the kids' academics and so on and get them into college. And, I think every kid who ever plays a sport, male or female, you have this dream of being, you know, in the pros and being the winner in a World Series champion. But Coach Anderson knows that that's not going to happen, so he has them have this plan B by getting into college and finishing school.
For sure. And at the same time, also, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, the rest of his coaching staff. Obviously, there's a ton of guys, you know, that he played with that played, you know, at a very high level along with him. He's got a number of former Division I athletes, former professional athletes on his staff as well. A lot of Lynn guys who, you know, the main thing talking to guys like that, Alvin Abreu, Corey Bingham, guys like this, the main thing was they wanted to come back to the city that they're from and give back to the kids in the city. And that was kind of the main theme, that's kind of been that way since they've taken over as the coaching staff, you know, 4 years ago. It was all about making sure the kids are all right, making sure they have an opportunity, and then, you know, what they do with that opportunity is up to them, you know, and they've obviously taken it and run with it for the most part.
Pretty cool. I'm going to turn it over to a Lynn kid in a second here to Tim, but I want to ask you, we need to finish up basketball season, Mike, if you would. So you got to finish it up for me for Lynn English girls and then over to classical on both boys and girls.
So Lynn English girls made it through to the GBL tournament final on the girls' side. They played Everett. They unfortunately came up just short. They lost. They had a great season. They have a really young team. The big thing for Mackenzie Charles, the coach over there the whole year, was, you know, learning experience, getting these girls into big games and playing as many, you know, important games as they can. And, you know, they were a really good, scrappy team who, you know, fought hard and played physical basketball, and they came up just short against Everett, but they're certainly going to be a force to be reckoned with, you know, for the next couple of years. As far as classical, this was for the boys. On the boys' side, this was the first year for Marvin Avery as the head coach. And, you know, they did a nice job. I believe they were maybe 7-4 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a good season, solid season. They lost in the first round of the GBL tournament. I'm sorry, the second round of the GBL tournament, the semifinal round. So they won a game and then lost. But they've got, you know, a bright future. They've got some good young players, that are going to be coming back next year. And then same for the classical girls. Obviously, yeah, they had a little bit of a tougher season. They, I believe, lost in the first round of the GBL tournament, if I remember correctly. And, but, you know, Coach Tom Sawyer over there, he does a great job, and, they'll be back, ready to go next year as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Jamboree, in December. Tim?
has there been as much jumping back and forth, East Lynn to West Lynn, with kids over the last year or so? Or is they pretty much, you know, settled in where East Lynn kids are just sticking it out in English, West Lynn kids are sticking it out at classical? Because when that first went into effect, I mean, kids were just leapfrogging all over the place.
Yeah, I'm sure there are still cases of people bouncing around, but I would imagine for the most part, you know, generally when you talk to people about, you know, the classical English rivalry and things like that, one of the big things they obviously mention is East Lynn versus West Lynn, right? So it's one of those things that, I think for the most part, kids are sticking with the school on their side of town. but like you said, I'm sure there are certainly still cases of kids bouncing around, I'm sure, for whatever reason there is.
Mike, go ahead, Tim.
I'm a Westland kid. And I went to Dominic Savio in East Boston for high school, but you rooted for Classical because it was the Westland side of town.
Right, exactly.
I played my baseball Westland American, my Legion ball for Post 6. So you know back in the day when I was playing in the late 60s, early 70s, playing Legion ball, I mean it was Eastland Westland. There wasn't a dividing line. And in the last few years, that's really just become a blur as the kids have moved, you know, back and forth through downtown to go to high school. And I'm just wondering if it had stayed that way or it slowed down at all.
It is interesting because, you know, obviously they play, these kids these days play obviously a lot of AAU stuff and outside of school leagues and things like that. So, you know, talking to, you know, the coaches, when you talk about for basketball, for example, the Classical English game, these kids play together in the summertime, right? These kids know each other. They're friends. They want to compete against each other. So it is kind of interesting where they all do kind of, like you said, the lines are a little bit blurred because they do play together in the off season and stuff like that. So.
So Mike, are winter sports over now, in Lynn, for the public schools?
So the GBL hockey playoffs are going to be coming up this week, and then this will be the final week of that. So beginning on April 12th, which I believe is next Monday, a week from today, that's when the Fall Sports 2 mm-hmm. will begin for the GBL team, so
okay.
Classical and English.
All right. And how are we doing hockey over I have not been able to follow it.
Yeah, it was a tough year for the Lynn Jets. They had a lot of injuries. They didn't have as big of a turnout as they were hoping for this year as well. I don't think they won a game so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they get a bid into the tournament simply because of the number of teams that are playing in the GB. I think it's only four because Malden and Revere are combined, and I think Medford and Malden I think are combined, something like that. So they didn't have a very strong year. It's been tough past couple years for them. But Mike Roberts is a good guy over there, and hopefully they'll be back better than ever next year.
Okay, I talked with Sean Driscoll today. Now St. Mary's got to play the regular sports in every single season. They got to stay open, and I'm updated with him. What about Kipp Academy and Lynn Tech?
So Kipp Academy and Lynn Tech. So basically, the way it works for them is their league, the Commonwealth Athletic Conference, did decide to go forward with winter sports earlier this year. So those schools missed out. So, for example, Lynn Tech missed out on basketball. Kipp missed out on basketball. So they basically started with the Fall 2 sports. They're both playing football, soccer, volleyball right now.
Gotcha. All right. Now before I let Tim finish this thing up here. Okay. I'm so confused now. So let me think. Okay. So Lynn English, Lynn Classical go into Fall 2 next.
Yes.
And the other schools go into spring sports next. Do I have that right?
Yes. So that'll be, it's slightly offset. So beginning next Monday, Fall Sports 2 will begin for English and Classical. That means they'll be allowed to play volleyball, soccer, field hockey, football.
Mm-hmm.
And then on April 25th, which is, 2 weeks after that, the rest of the schools, the Northeastern Conference schools, Linfield over in the Cape Ann League, all those schools will start playing spring sports, baseball, softball, lacrosse, all of those.
Okay, and will English and Classical have spring sports as well after Fall 2?
That will start again. It'll be offset where those will start, I believe, in somewhere around May 10th or something like that, I believe is the date.
Oh, man, thanks so much.
Spring sports will start.
I would have missed this whole stuff if it weren't for you. Tim, pick Mike's brain, will you?
I'm so confused.
So was I. But not now.
Try putting schedules together every week and trying to cover all this stuff. It's not easy to keep track of.
You've done a great job, Mike. I got to tell you, it's been awesome reading your stuff.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
I just can't imagine what you guys and on the sports pages and the ADs and even the coaches have been going through as you try to align all this stuff and make adjustments, and then you've got a team that gets some virus and there's a cancellation. You know, to me, a few weeks back, the game of the week wasn't the one that was played. It was waiting for the announcement of the one that wasn't going to be played.
Right, absolutely.
Hey, listen, Mike, I got to ask you, did you keep your eye, have you had an eye over on Winthrop? Because I think the Winthrop football program did an amazing thing last week. And, Tim, I don't know if you're aware of this, but they were scheduled to play a school on Saturday, and instead they pivoted. That game got canceled. They turned around, and instead of playing a game on Saturday, on Wednesday they prepared for a game on Thursday. And Winthrop is a Division VI school. They ended up playing Framingham, Division One, and they beat Framingham.
Yeah, it's been a great year for Winthrop. We wrote a nice story a few weeks ago about their quarterback, Dylan Doherty, goes by Duke Doherty sometimes. He played his first couple of years at Everett High,
mm-hmm.
And was a great player there. Decided to come back home to his hometown of Winthrop and play there. He was living with his father over in Everett and moved back over with his mother in Winthrop. And they've been having a great season. Their coach over there, John Cadigan, does a great job. They've got a really good defense. They've got some really tough, hard-nosed players on the offensive side of the ball. A lot of multiple sport athletes, a lot of kids who played, you know, hockey over the winter and stuff like that, who are now contributing on the football field. Same with basketball. It was really impressive for them to come out and, you know, not only take on a Division One team, because we've seen, you know, other teams do that. You know, St. Mary's played St. John's Prep in their first game of the season because of cancellations and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But to go out there and you know, take them on, go toe-to-toe and beat them was really impressive feat and definitely a statement win for the program.
Absolutely. And, Tim, that's the kind of thing we're used to from Winthrop, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. You know, and like I said before, you know, I went to Dontavio and Jim Darty, my basketball coach, and Henry McCarthy, the Winthrop coach, were the best of friends. So we used to scrimmage and play those guys all the time. And it was like the Dirt Devils. You were getting down and dirty with those guys, whether you were on the basketball court, the baseball court, the football, the baseball field, the football field, the diamond. Wherever you went and played Winthrop, it was a dog day afternoon. You had to get ready to scrap, because they were going to kick your butt if you didn't.
Yeah, they're a hard-nosed football. I saw a funny quote from another reporter after that game, and he said, you know, a lot of the guys on the team, especially in the offensive side of the ball, are on the shorter side. And, you know, one of the players said, hey, you know, I don't know what it is, something about us being short or something, but, you know, we're hard-nosed guys, and we make up for it with toughness, you know what I mean? And that's just kind of how it is.
Always have. And it goes back. You know, the epitome is 1980, and these guys did a great job, I'm telling you. Hey, Mike, What can we mention? What do you want to tease coming up in the item on the sports side? What are you guys covering this week?
Well, we're obviously excited about, you know, kind of this kind of upcoming week. We're going to do a couple previews. We're going to preview the English football team and as many of the, you know, fall two teams as we can. Same on the classical side. We love covering Revere football as well. Lou Ciccatelli is, you know, one of the all-time great guys out there. So we love covering them as well over in the GBL. So we're going to get a preview on them as well. And you know, we're keeping our eye obviously on the major leagues. We didn't mention it today, here, but, you know, Lynn native Ben Bowden, former English star.
Yes.
You know, made the opening day roster for the Rockies. I talked to him the other day. He was, you know, incredibly excited. He's feeling good. He's healthy now. And he's really looking to prove himself. Had a great, kind of debut there. First pitching. And, you know, so we're kind of keeping an eye on him as well, hoping that he does well and, just kind of making it through this kind of weird part of the schedule here where there's that little overlap in fall sports too on the Northeastern Conference side and then on the GBL side now with English and classical. So we're kind of trying to marry those two up once everything gets going next week.
All right. That's the item in print, itemlive.com. Mike Alangi is the sports editor. And Mike, man, thank you so much. I'll check in with you again real soon.
For sure. Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it as always.
Thank you, man. Take care.
You as well. Bye.
All right. That is Mike Alangi, who is the sports editor at the item of, I don't know, Tim, what's it called? It's itemlive.com. It used to be called the Lynn Daily Item, but it's just the item.
The daily evening item.
Daily evening item. Yep.
I was young.
Yeah. And now it's just item. It's the item. But it is of Lynn. And thanks to Mike. I mean, Mike is a relative newcomer. And as you can tell, so well versed, and he covers it all and does a great job. So we really appreciate his helps. You okay now, Tim? Because, man, I talked to Mike a couple of weeks ago when this all started, and like, holy crap, this is so confusing to me, but he's got it all figured out.
Yeah. No, I still don't have it figured out.
Okay. We'll go to Gary Larrabee in a minute and talk some golf, and I know you got that figured out. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. We'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Okay, we are back now, and we're joined by Gary Larrabee, a sports historian, golf writer, and all-around good guy. Gary, happy Easter Monday. How are you?
Happy Easter Monday and happy Masters Week.
There you go. I know you'd be pumped. I know Tim is pumped.
Oh, yeah. Gary, I know everybody's really glad that Jordan Spieth won a tournament after 4 years. How does that suddenly throw him into the favorite mix?
That's a knee-jerk reaction I will not share.
Do you think it is correct?
Well, I guess it's what they do every year anyways. If you win the tournament before the Masters and you're playing in the Masters anyways, and of course if you win the tournament before the Masters, you get in the Masters that very next week. And the fact that he's won the Masters once, he's won 4 majors, or 3 majors. You gotta put him in the mix somewhere, Tim, that's for sure.
Yeah. I was on ESPN and they were saying, you know, him, DeChambeau and, Dustin Johnson are the three favorites, and I'm thinking, I don't know. Because DeChambeau could hit his way right out of the tournament early.
I'm sure we learned though from last fall's disappointment. But the other big news I think of the beginning of Masters Week is the fact that Brooks Koepka, less than a month after a procedure on his knee, the knee that's been bothering him for years, is ready to go. He's playing, and I like the fact he's there, but can he handle those hills? And for 4, 5, 6 days, I don't know. He'll probably have very short, very brief practice run. But the mere fact, guys, Brooks Koepka is at the Masters. That certainly adds another intriguing storyline to the tournament.
Yeah, I just happened to catch that story, and I'm thinking, well, that's pushing the recovery. And again, no exemptions for a cart. He's going to have to hoof it. And having had knee surgery, 1, 2, 3 on the left, 2 on the right, I can tell you, doing a lot of walking right away isn't the most comfortable thing.
No, I agree. And I don't think he'll be a factor this week, but he could surprise us. But I think you have to put DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas at the top of the favorites list, Tim, unless you have a long shot dark horse you want to share with us tonight.
I'm not going with your boy because I was listening to English Sports Talk today. They were talking about the Rory and how he's just all messed up, you know, and they don't see him as any kind of a contender at all for this week. So I'd like to go with Ricky Fowler, but that's right, he's not playing.
Yeah, he's become quite the disappointment the last couple of years, but.
And so is Rory, you know. And I wanted to ask you, you know, is it just that these guys, some of these guys, can't handle the expectation that they bring upon themselves with some early success, and then they think, oh, it's always going to happen, and then when it doesn't happen, they can't handle that?
Interesting point that you bring up. I still wouldn't be surprised if he's in the hunt for all 4 days. But on current form, you can't expect Rory to be in contention. I think we could expect Spieth to be in contention because he has been playing pretty good golf the last 4 to 6 weeks. Several top tens. He finally breaks through. But thankfully it's Masters Week again, guys, and it should be very exciting as it always is on the weekend. It's still the greatest golf show on earth, and let's see who becomes the star this week.
Gary, when you were covering the Masters and you'd go down there, when did you go down? Because, you know, the actual competition begins on Thursday, but I'm guessing it's probably like the Super Bowl. There's probably a whole bunch of stuff before that during the week.
Exactly right. I get down there on Monday typically, in time to get a couple of stories in for Tuesday's paper. It's 3 days of build-up, granted, but there's always good storylines, very little controversy. No one wants to be controversial in how they act or the way they speak at the Masters, because the people who run the Masters frown on stuff like that. But of course, so right now, I think, guys, the only real big name player who will not be there this week is Tiger Woods. And of course, we have a very interesting situation that brewed the last few days with Tiger Woods, Tim. You remember what I'm talking about?
No, I haven't seen anything.
No, the authorities in LA who were conducting the investigation into what happened made a public pronouncement a few days ago that they will have nothing to share with the public or with the media for the indefinite future. And, of course, we know that Tiger was either falling asleep or he was drunk or he was whatever happened. He lucky he didn't kill himself. He's lucky he didn't kill anybody else crossing the median strip, crossing the two or three lanes on the other side, and then going down this embankment. So for whatever reason...
Those are police that are simply looking for some ink. Because if you're not going to have anything to say about Tiger, why say anything at all? Why make a pronouncement that you're not going to say anything? If you're not going to say anything, you know?
Yeah, I think you're a good point. I think we're going to find something out about this whole situation down the road. It won't be this week during Masters Week, but at some point, the facts of the situation are going to have to be presented to the public. But right now, they're mum's the word, and I'm sure Tiger likes it that way.
What's the old saying, something rotten in Denmark? What about the local situation, Gary, before we let you go?
Well, we still have a month to go, Rick, before the first big tournament of the year comes up. But we're going to have the state four ball will be played at Turner Hill and Ipswich Country Club. I believe it's the 11th and 12th of May. That's a month off, but it'll come sooner than you think. Beyond that, happy to report we'll be starting to deliver golf columns to the Salem News the end of the week, and we'll be writing about Kip Tyler, who retired as the super successful course superintendent at Salem Country Club a year and a half ago after 38 years on the job. And he's getting a very special award from his own organization, the New England Golf Course Superintendents Association, very well deserved. And we'll look back on his extraordinary career, keeping Salem a championship venue for 38 years, both for the USGA and for the state and New England organizations.
Wow, and that's in Friday's paper this week, right?
I hope.
Okay. Me too. All right, Gary. Love the positive there. You know, come on, man.
No, thank you. One last thing, Rick, if I might make note of it, of the passing on April 1st of Dr. John Duff, who was the pioneer in sports orthopedic surgery and sports medicine here on the North Shore and probably in the state.
Yeah.
You know, Dave St. Pierre now runs that practice. You know, John died at the age of 93, but he was one of the first orthopedic surgeons in America to separate regular orthopedic surgery to sports-related orthopedic surgery, and other forms of sports medicine became nationally acclaimed for what he was doing back in the early 60s. And Dave St. Pierre and Doug Peterson are continuing to do that work in the same location there on State Road in Danvers that John Duff started almost 60 years ago.
Wow.
I went and saw Dr. Duff when my knees started to go in the early 90s. He was the first knee guy I went to see.
I hope you got some good results.
Well, he didn't do the surgery, but I got a lot of good advice. I'll tell you that.
No, he was an icon in the sports medicine field nationally. He worked for, he served on several medical staffs for the U.S. Olympic team. He did an awful lot of stuff, Rick, to improve the safety of high school athletics, here in Massachusetts, particularly in eliminating spearing, creating mouthpieces, and a lot of great stuff that made high school sports a safer activity. And he leaves quite a legacy,
because
that's now his one major protege was David St. Pierre from Salem, who continues to do the great work with Doug Peterson. But at 93 years old, we certainly want to pay tribute to John Duff.
Absolutely. Great job and great story, Gary. Thank you for bringing that up. Coach Ingram has mentioned him a lot in the past. Let's see. We will do this again next week, and it should be fun talking in retrospect about the Masters.
Yes, who are you picking, Tim?
I'm going to go with Dustin Johnson.
Well, I was going to, but since you are, you're going to expect him to be the first repeat champion.
Yeah, that's kind of like the kiss of death. But that hasn't been happening, you know?
Well, I think he's a very, very good choice. I'm going to go really wacko out on my limb and say that somehow Brooks Koepka is going to perform a miracle this week.
All right,
and win on a very bad knee.
Okay, and I'll hold the money.
What I wanted to ask you about Koepka, about that, because he's coming back from his injury, and this is from having played sports, but especially golf, it would work in his favor more than any other sport. Slow him down, make him more deliberate. That he's not trying to attack the knee, but he's trying to play with a smoother flow to his game. And will that allow him to negotiate Augusta a little bit easier than if he was trying to really hang it up and let it go?
Good question. The fact remains he's been given the green light to play, and I don't think he would want to jeopardize the rest of his season or his career by really sticking his neck out and playing when he shouldn't be playing. So watch out for Brooks Koepka this week.
All right. Hey, Gary, last question. Gonzaga or Baylor?
I hate to break your hearts, guys, but it looks like Baylor. Baylor looks like the stronger team.
That's what I'm hearing.
Let's hope it's a fantastic game like that game two was with UCLA and Gonzaga Saturday night. Let's hope it's a great game.
We got Mike Grenier coming up to talk all about that. Gary, thank you so much. We'll see you on Monday.
Have a great week, guys.
Thank you, Gary. You too. All right, that's Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer. We will take a quick break, come back with Mike Grenier. We'll talk a little bit about that game, which was an amazing game. We'll be right back.
Good.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Good.
And here we go. Mike Grenier is with us right now as we come back live, and I'll shut the music off. And Mike Grenier, sports writer, and following up Gary Larrabee and our other sports writer earlier, Michael Longi, the sports editor of the item of Lynn. And Tim, I emailed Mike earlier tonight that I never watch college basketball, you know, but I did watch the other night UCLA and Gonzaga. And needless to say, that's up there in the pantheon of all-time fantastic finishes and fantastic games back and forth for any sport in a playoff or a tournament. And Mike, I want to start with you. It seemed to me that UCLA was the better team, but Gonzaga pulled it out.
Well, yeah, and that's what teams that have been up there all year, like Gonzaga, obviously 31-0. They know how to win the close games, although I don't know if it was that was the case the other night, or if it was just a case of a lucky shot from a little over half court. But UCLA certainly overachieved throughout the tournament. They were a play-in team, Rick. In other words, they don't...
No, I didn't know that, yeah.
They had to play their way in, and they had like three overtime games. They played, really, they executed a perfect game the other night. The only thing they couldn't execute was the defense from half court.
Yeah.
You know, so, and it was. I agree with you. I've been watching the NCAA tournament for a very long time, and that was, if not the best, one of the best games of all time, simply because I think UCLA came in as probably a major underdog in most people's eyes, and justifiably so. And Gonzaga, of course, being a great team, was you know, legitimately, I think, a strong favorite. But UCLA, I kept, you know, my wife and I were watching the game, we're going like every 4 minutes when they had those media timeouts. I kept saying, if UCLA keeps it close after all those media timeouts, They have a shot to win this game, and sure enough, they pulled it into overtime, and they had a shot. It would have certainly been a second overtime, and they would have had a shot then. So it was an awesome game. Matter of fact, I knew it was an awesome game because my phone was dinging after the game, and people texting me saying, "Mike, what? That's the best college game I've seen in 20 years, or the best college game I've seen in 25 years." I mean, everyone was kind of excited by that, and I think it kind of generates some interest for the Baylor Gonzaga championship game tonight.
Agreed. Tim?
You know, I didn't watch the game, but I get up after, I woke up and I turned the TV on, I went to ESPN and I saw, I went, oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just an incredible finish. And like you said, you know, that's a playground shot. And you know, the kid admitted it. You know, we're just hanging around at the gym. That's a shot you practice. You know, you keep throwing it up there hoping one of them will go in.
Right.
And that's what, I mean, he happened to launch it with the correct amount of spin. I mean, off the backboard and nothing but net. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, that's literally what we call a prayer.
Yeah, exactly.
Prayer got answered.
And it got answered. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so you have to give UCLA a lot of credit for hanging in for as long as they did. And obviously, if not for that lucky shot, they would have gone into a second overtime, and they might have been a slightly better team in the second overtime. We'll never know because it ended the way it did. And the thing I like about tonight's game, guys, is that neither Baylor nor Gonzaga has ever won the national championship.
All right.
That makes it especially interesting, I think. You know, and of course, if Gonzaga does it. Now, at this point, guys, and Tim, you both of you remember this, going into the championship game, the team that did it most recently was Larry Bird's 1979 Indiana State team. They were 31-0 and then lost, obviously, to Magic Johnson and Michigan State. So they had a shot to finish undefeated, a national champion, but obviously Magic Johnson and Michigan State had a much better team that year. I mean, obviously Indiana State was all about Larry Bird and a bunch of role players, but it shows you how phenomenal a player Larry Bird was at the college level, as we all remember.
I see those things occasionally on Facebook, the video highlights of Bird. And I forgot some of those plays. Good Lord, was he amazing. But I want to change the channel here a little bit, Mike and Tim, if you don't mind. And I want to ask you, Mike, about the emergence of Rob Williams.
Oh, my God. You know, it's funny. Maybe like a lot of Celtics, I don't know if a lot of Celtics fans felt the same way, but I was a bit skeptical going into this season because he was kind of injury prone earlier in his career, and he didn't show much development because he wasn't getting a lot of minutes because he had been so injury prone. But boy, has he made a gigantic leap this season into a position of prominence to the point where the Celtics could let Daniel Theis go, and they can live without Tristan Thompson, who's been COVID protocol for about 6 months, you know, and they could go with Rob Williams as their primary center now. So this kid has emerged as a defensive force, you know, a shot blocker, and you know, the other night he was 9 for 9 from the floor. Granted, a lot of those were lob layups, but he has phenomenal athletic skill, and he's learning more and more about defense. He's not making the kind of mistakes he made a year ago, and he's become a real force. And he plays taller. I think we've said this before, he plays taller than his listed size, which I believe is 6'8". And, yeah, I love the way he's playing, especially on a team that the past few months has ranked 29th in the NBA in defense. But this guy gives them defense. He gives them block shots. And, of course, Marcus Smart gives them defense. So there's a tiny ray of hope there that the Celtics will do something come late the season and come the playoffs. They're still just a 500 team. And we cannot read too much into the fact that they've beaten the Houston Rockets, who had a 20-game losing streak a few weeks ago, and the Charlotte Hornets, who were without two starters last night, and one of them being Gordon Hayward, the other one being LaMelo Ball. You know, it has been a very good rookie. So you can't read too much into those two wins, but at least it built a tiny bit of momentum. And I think they have, Rick, of course, you've been in Philadelphia. You've many times. They have the 76ers tomorrow night.
Well, yeah, I was it you, Mike, who a few weeks ago sort of likened some of Rob Williams' game to Bill Russell? Did you?
Yeah, well, yeah, because we mentioned the way he blocked shots. But
yes.
As we said, Russell kept the ball in play.
Right, right.
And you know, obviously Celtics teammates hustled to get the loose ball. Rob Williams, and I think he's doing it less of this, though. A year ago, he would have been content with batting the ball into the third row of the stands because, you know, it looks impressive and everybody says, look how strong he is. However, I think he's done a better job of trying to keep the ball in play this season. And I just think it comes with experience, learning the game, and the fact that Brad Stevens maybe has talked to them, you know, and the coaching staff have talked to him about keeping the ball in play. And I just think his learning curve has gone up tremendously this season. I mean, Tim, do you feel the same way? It seems like his learning curve has gone up because really, really, it's been a strong suit for him this season.
You know, he play. You know, you're talking about his size. He plays, and you mentioned this, he plays much taller because he's so long in the arm that, you know, I look at him and I think, he's got to be 6'10" or better.
Right.
He's not. You know, but, I mean, he elevates with better than anybody else on the team.
Yeah, and he also elevates quickly. He's got a lot of, he has great spring in his legs, obviously, but he elevates so quickly, sometimes he comes out of nowhere to block shots because he's got such athletic skill. And obviously, he surprised me on offense a little bit because sometimes he's hitting like a foul line jumper or an in-close jumper, something he couldn't do a year ago. So, to me, he's been the best story on the Celtics, by far the most improved player and a real positive impact player, whereas a lot of guys have had disappointing seasons. He's had a terrific season so far and only seems to be getting better as the season progresses.
You know, I also hit an occasional jump shot when I played in high school. But I knew enough, you know, my best shot was the layup. And that's what it is for him. He plays he loves to go to the rim. And that's gonna make his money as the player, not being afraid to go in and grab a rebound, put it back up. Look for the dunk lob, you know, which he makes exciting more than anybody else on the team because of his size and strength. And I totally agree that he has gotten better because there's less of an edge to his game now.
Yep, yep. And how about the other guy, Rick? We should mention Evan Fournier, who was the mid-season, you know, the trade deadline pickup. And, you know, his opening game with the Celtics could not have been any worse. 0 for 10 from the floor.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's thinking, oh, my God, this is the best. But, I mean, the guy is an eight-year veteran, and I think he's in his ninth year. And he just kind of shrugged that off. And after he hit 9 consecutive threes over a 2-game span before he finally missed one last night. And obviously coming off the bench, he's given them 17, 18 points. I mean, come on, that's a phenomenal pickup off the bench because they were getting no bench production to speak of earlier this season. So at least at this point, it looks like a very positive pickup for the Celtics. And I, you know what I like about him, guys? He's from France. And he speaks with a little bit of a French accent, and I love that, being French-Canadian, you know?
All right. Hey, listen, Mike, what about the North Shore contingent in the pros? Have you been keeping your eye on them?
Oh, sure. Pat Connaughton has been playing anywhere from 25 to 35 minutes a game off the bench. Giannis was out with an injury the other night, and Connaughton played 31 minutes as a starter and gave him 9 points, 6 rebounds, a couple of assists. He does a little bit of everything. And, of course, the Bucks are obviously a top-3 team in the Eastern Conference. So he's been playing a major role with that team. So, and, of course, I guess an outside North Shore connection would be Jalen Brunson, the son of Rick Brunson, the all-time Salem High great who won a state title back in 1990. And Jalen Brunson has been playing tremendous for the Dallas Mavericks off the bench. And, you know, I saw him play at Villanova, and I actually did a couple of stories on him when Villanova came to the Boston Garden for the regionals 3 or 4 years ago. And what a great kid. And you kind of always knew that even if he was chosen in the second round, that he was going to be a solid NBA player. And that's exactly what he's been. Sometimes he starts, he'll give you 20 points as a starter. A lot of times he comes off the bench and gives you 16, 18 points. He's an extremely solid player who went to a school, Villanova, where he got great coaching from Jay Wright.
Great stuff, Mike. Great stuff. Tim, any final thoughts?
Well, Tim, what happened to the UConn women?
Uh-oh.
Oh, please.
Uh-oh.
I was just hoping you might pass that. You know, I didn't even see the game. I knew they were on at 9:30. I sent my brother a message to that effect, and then I went to sleep. And, I mean, they lost by 10, so I guess it was a pretty convincing loss.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I mean, Arizona was up by 15 at one point, and UConn actually cut it to, I believe, 5. And couldn't get over the hump. But I mean, but Arizona certainly deserved the game. They kind of led it pretty much from wire to wire and kind of dominated the game. So they really, really did deserve the game, Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Mike, always.
So Mike, we got to tip your cap and move on.
Yep, yep.
And that's what we'll do. So we'll see you next Monday night, Mike.
That sounds great, Rick, and we'll discuss anything in the world.
All right, let's hope it's all good.
Yeah, well, the Red Sox are off to an 0-3 start here, and people are wondering if they're going to, you know, like, recover. I mean, they have 159 games to go, you know?
Okay, well, you know, you're the voice of optimism, so we'll check in with you, and we'll see how that goes next week.
All right, that sounds good, guys. Thanks an awful lot.
Thank you, Mike. Take care.
Bye now.
All right. That's Mike Grenier, who is a sports writer extraordinaire, of course, covering all sports, but keeping his eye on the NBA and the local contingent in the NBA as well. And, Tim, I'm going to give you the last thoughts on the Red Sox. They scored 8 runs. They gave up 17. They don't have any defense. They don't have any offense, and their pitching is mediocre. But you have the last word.
Okay. There was a Twitter note that said one of the guys in the team who started yesterday would set a record for being the first Red Sox player ever to start the first 3 games of the season at 3 different positions. Therein lies the Red Sox problem. They don't have a set lineup. When you're using one guy in 3 different places, you've got issues. You don't have, who's your starting line? Who are your best 9 players at their positions on the team? They don't even know, apparently. And this game of Russian roulette of exchanging guys in and out of the lineup, 1 game here, 2 games here, another guy. You play 3 games, you need a day off. Give me a break. 3 days, you play 3 games, your game only lasts 3 hours. What are you doing the rest of the 24 hours?
Mm-hmm.
You know, out running marathons that you're too tired to play the next day. You know, you get up and you swing the bat at the plate four times a game. You may have three ground balls hit you in the course of the game. Is standing out on the field getting a little too much for you? This is awful. This is why there's no consistency with that team up and down the lineup.
Well,
let's take Demas out. Okay, he played too well. He had a little struggle. You know, it drives me crazy to keep seeing different lineups out there every single day and shifting people up and down the lineup.
Well, it hurts me because they're all great athletes, no matter what where you sit. If you're in the major leagues, you're a major leaguer, but. When you see a major league team play with virtually minor leaguers, it's a little disturbing, and it looks to me like they've got a lot of minor leaguers on the team.
It is definitely no name, and I just get tired of seeing it. I want to see a starting nine.
Yeah. Good point. Well, let's see if that shakes out. It could, and we'll see what happens. They got. A game tonight, and the NCAA championship game is on tonight, and there's a lot to talk about. But I want our visitors to take a look at the website. We've got plenty more interviews coming up again tomorrow, plus the Salem News Sports Writers with Bill Newell will be on tomorrow, their podcast, their Zoomcast. And a couple of coaches that we will be talking to that will be posting, the Ipswich High School football coach, Kevin Fassett, and St. John's Prep football coach Brian St. Pierre. And Tim, you're telling me we have a guest all lined up for next Monday night.
Next week we will have the ever-effervescent Lou Ciccatelli, the head football coach from EV, will be one of our guests.
Looking forward to that. Coach, thank you very much. It's not going to be too much longer, and you'll be back in studio with me, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too.
All right, Tim, take care.
All righty, buddy.
All right, good night. All right, that's Tim Kearns, our MSO ambassador of goodwill, and of course our sports analyst, extraordinary. Use that word twice in one night. That's weird. Okay, anyway, thank you for being with us. I want to thank our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Of course, Bill Newell, as always, for helping out. And thanks to our guests, as always, and to all the coaches who have made this school year so much fun, despite the travails that we've had with the pandemic. The coaches, the athletic directors, the educators, the parents, the kids, just done a phenomenal job. And so everybody stay safe, stay healthy, do the right thing, and we'll see you again next Monday night. So on behalf of MSO News Sports staff, I'm Rick Moore. This is MSONewsSports.com.